This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodi. It's our Health and Living segment and we're discussing World Occupational Therapy Day. When a person gets injured, becomes ill or suffers from a disability, simple everyday chores become much, much more difficult. And that's where occupational therapy comes in. Occupational therapists actually aim to empower their clients to help them do the things they need to do. And with this World Occupational Therapy Day, having just passed this week, we have Mr. Sosie Bing, President of the Malaysian Occupational Therapy Association with us, together with Professor Nathan Vaitalingam, immediate past president of the Asia-Pacific Occupational Therapy Regional Group. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Thanks for having us, Meera.
You know, Mr. So, Prof. Nathan, could you just quickly go back and help me understand what occupational therapy is? Because we often misunderstand occupational therapy, and you have physiotherapy. There's so many therapies going on. What is the difference, really? How do you differentiate it?
Well, I think if you go back into history, occupational therapy has been there from the time of it goes back to the primitive period of time. People were doing various types of occupation for survival and function. So in terms of job, in terms of quality of their lives span and everything. As it evolved and moved on, time of the war, First World War, Second World War, that's when occupational therapy really moved up. They needed somebody, inverted commas, to keep the patients occupied mentally and physically. So the profession started growing gradually during just after the war. So in 1951, you're looking at about a couple of countries, 10 different countries got together, came up with a joint commission statement of the need for occupational therapy. And that's how the World Federation of Occupational Therapists was formed in 1952. The start of 1951. And interesting enough, the only Asian country was India. All the rest were Australia, New Zealand, a couple of Scandinavian countries, and that sort of thing. The aspects of occupational therapy and physiotherapy, there are a lot of overlap in some of the things that we do. In Canada at one time, they had a program where when you qualify, it's a dual degree. And there was only one badge they ever had. You know why, Meera? Because they didn't know whether they were occupational therapists or physiotherapists.
They weren't sure
what they were. Yeah. So, you know, and the whole in Canada, they scraped off the program. So it has evolved now, the whole thing. And basically, we work in a client-centered profession, basically looking at returning somebody to their so-called normal life, looking at their profession, looking at occupation. In terms of occupation here, we're looking at in terms of activities that you do, and that's how we term as occupation. Occupation doesn't mean work to us, and that's what it is.
So many of us, occupational therapy means a major accident, or what comes to mind is SOXO, actually. yeah, in true. Malaysia, that's what comes to mind when you say occupational therapy. But who becomes an occupational therapy client? And I notice you don't call them your patients. Yeah. Who actually becomes a client, Mr. So?
Okay. Occupational therapy is vitally important profession that help people across the lifespan. Occupational therapists help people with mental, physical, and social disability to independently carry out everyday tasks or occupation. OT work with children, adults, and old age whose difficulty may have been present since birth or the result of an accident, illness, aging, or lifestyle. So normally our clients encompassing children and youth with disability and delay in milestone development. For instance, that children with autistic learning disability. There's also injured adult and work-related problems, such as patients with economic problem, low back pain, adult with disabilities such as chronic pain, spinal cord injury, stroke, and traumatic brain injury. Besides that, elderly with poor in functional capability and levels of independency, those are geriatric patients. And also adult with mentally disorder, those are got psychological problem, psychology disorder.
So that's everyone, really, from children all
yes,
the way?
Actually, yes, that's why throughout their lifespan.
You're actually looking at birth to tomb, you know, for children, newborn babies, right up to old age. But, you know, very historically, it's interesting. Occupation therapy very much started off in mental institutions, because you need to keep the so-called patients, or as we refer to as clients, mentally occupied. So if you look at a lot of the old traditional occupational therapies, is making craft and basketry and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. Now,
what do you call them, clients and not patients?
Well, I think we tend to use the word clients because they're not necessarily there in a hospital setting. Not necessarily they are in a ward, or, and very often we refer them to as clients is partly because they're long-standing, and actually they end up becoming your good friend. I mean, I had patients of mine for 2-3 years later who used to call me out and go out for a meal. You know, I mean, they sort of get to know you so well that, but you mention a certain amount of professionalism here, and obviously that I don't call them patients because they're not sick. You are now looking at someone who has gone through the acute phase, coming out of the acute phase and moving on. So we tend to refer them to as clients, and that's how, to be fair, the World Federation, when we had our council meetings, which is held once in 4 years, that's how that we came up to think that they should be referred to as clients, which was a thing that was taken by all the countries concerned. At the moment in time, there are 80 countries in the World Federation of Occupational Therapy.
Yes. I'll come back to when Malaysia actually became a member. But Mr. So, the Occupational Therapy Association, who do you see coming forward to the association? Who comes to you for help? Who predominates? Which group of
Normally,
people?
Normally, those are coming to for help is our own members, our own OT, that they need more guidance and supervision. Also, we will try to help them and to lead them. And also, normally that patients hardly come to the associations. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, they might write through our Facebook and email to ask us about how to go about and where to seek for treatment. So, unlikely that patient comes straight to us, but the most they'll ask us where to get all the info and to get all the services that we provide.
Okay. And how many occupational therapists are part of this association?
Normally, currently we have about 1,800 OT in our country, but in association, those are registered members, about 800 over them. So we still did not manage to get 100% of our OT to become our member, because this is not a compulsory. So normally out of these 800 over, annually we conduct courses. We also organizing workshop in order to build out the skill and knowledge.
Okay. And who certifies who an occupational therapist really is? Can anyone become an occupational therapist?
No,
can I
no,
go and
no,
you know train wherever I like? So how do you become a member, and are there criteria?
You must be a qualified occupational therapist, and then your qualification must be recognized by Malaysia Qualifying Agency, and also that you are the clinician, that you are practitioner. So that means that we still can update all the knowledge, and then we still can interact with you regarding the patient care and also regarding the current need and current requirement for the patient care.
Okay. And currently your clients for these occupational therapies, who are they?
Our client actually, Prof. Nadan and myself mentioned just now, that is from head to toe and then from birth to date. So that's what we say, that our client can be from any aspect. So there can be acute hospital, can be the public health, can be a center, also can be from the school. So this is how that we also do screening. We also do a lot of what we call assessment. And beside that, we also giving a lot of advice and educating the family and the patients.
Okay. I'm just wondering, if I were to have a problem, how do I know whether I should come to an occupational therapist, or, you know, I can go, there are many other people with various specialities. So when do I come to an occupational therapist? Because if you have autism, you would go to a person who has, teaching skills for, you know, special needs children.
I don't think that, you're coming to just one person as such. Very often, occupation therapists are very much in terms of job evaluation, job assessment. That was yes. very well, demarcation is there in terms of return to work point of view. But very often we look at occupation therapists, why do they come? It's because you're looking in terms of functional independence. You want someone to be trained to become functionally independent and back into society. So the clients that are referred to us are very often by orthopedic surgeons, could be the neurologists or you name it. And very often they just refer you to you and say, look, could you help us out with this patient or a client, as I said. And so that's how we solicit for clients. And you cannot work alone. It's a team approach, you know,
it's
whatever.
Multidisciplinary team approach.
Completely.
So the end goal is to get this person able to help himself or herself and live. You teach them living skills? Is that what you're
That's right.
doing?
Yes, we are focusing on functional and living skills.
You call it, in terminology, we use it as modified Bachelor Index or Bachelor Scores, looking at dressing, toileting, you know, looking at all those aspects of independent living. And we structure it and say, look at what level the person can move on to the next stage. So the primary goal and assessment would be one thing. So the intervention will come later, and that sort of thing. So you need to look.
So I just would like to add a bit that our primary goal is to helping people improve their ability to carry out their daily tasks. It's a prime goal of our occupation, from our occupational therapist. That's when that as long as a patient can go back performing their daily tasks, can go back to the job, can go back to the family, can go back to the society, that's our primary goal. Mm-hmm. So if a patient that just stay at home and cannot perform anything, so for sure that they are not living as a normal human being. So the quality of life and the quality of life and also the what we call the productivity has reduced.
What does success depend on?
If you ask me, success is not me, it's what the patient. I think that's all the client. That they look at what success, you know. And obviously the success could vary. It's very often someone has very high expectations. And generally you set your standards and goals much at a lower level so that they reach higher. When you set it up too high for them, it brings them down emotionally and mentally because they couldn't reach that level. A simple classical example is someone with a spinal cord injury and you say, look, you should be able to stand up and walk when you know that the guy has his muscle powers only a grade 2 or grade 1 and you know it's going to take him some time to get up to grade 4 or grade 5 in order to be able to stand and walk. Now, he may not even reach that. Then do not, for goodness sake, set up and high expectations for this person because, again, you need to look at the diagnosis and look at what the aspects of condition of the person itself. You know, so that's very important aspect. But end of the day, it's what are the you got to be realistic, setting up goals. You got the patient has to be or the client has to be realistic. You need to tell them, look, you still have got abilities within you. I think one of the biggest mistakes that people do is they focus on the disability. They don't focus on the abilities. Every person who's got a disability has got an ability.
That's a very important point.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's where the mistake is. Focus on the abilities. Classical Stephen Hawking. Incredible, isn't it? I mean,
actually, we're talking about success rate. That's very difficult for us to determine is because basically the patient divide into two major groups. One is the acute condition, one is the chronic conditions. And then subsequently, whether the disability or the problem is permanent or temporary. Let's say that it's a spinal cord injury patients, spinal cord injury patients or the traumatic brain injury. Unlikely we can cure them. What we try to do is try to bring them to the maximum levels of independence, whereby that whether they can cope with their own daily life, whether they can go back to their work with special modification on wheelchair or the workplace. And those are the acute injury, for example, the tendon cut, those are the fractures. Most probably we manage to treat them and return almost 100%. So that's why that it mainly depends on the condition and the degree of injury or degree of illness.
Do you work with the family? Would you work with the school to ensure that this person could actually go back?
Yes. Yeah. So that's why even occupational therapy do worksite visit, we do school visit. We try to modify the environment suit to the patient's condition. So some of the things that the patient's illness or disability is permanent. We cannot change. For example, you have a spinal cord injury with the levels G12. It's no way for you to walk without any special aid or gadget. So that's why that maybe the patient will be more comfortable with sitting on the wheelchair. So what we do that we need to make sure that all the pathway and all the workplace are accessible to wheelchair. So we need to talk to the employer, and also we need to do some simple modifications for the house environment in order for the patient to be independent. Mm-hmm.
Some families would probably take on this role, Professor Nala, yeah, rather than to seek the help of an occupational therapist. First of all, we don't even think of an occupational therapist when it comes to things like this because we don't realize that they are there for this kind of support. Yeah. Where do we find them? Where do we go and find or seek the help of an occupational therapist?
I think the majority of occupational therapists are working in hospitals now. I mean, in Malaysia, you're looking at easily about 85 to 90% of them in all various hospital settings. But that's not the right way. If you look in Australia, you're looking only about less than 50% of the therapists working in hospitals. Most of them out in the community outreach programs.
Which they should be.
Which should be. You're right. And I think one of the thing is the shortage of therapists in this country. The other factor is people generally feel that the security is to work in a hospital setting rather than looking at the community. So it's slowly moving on to the direction. And I think now if you look at the Ministry of Health, they're talking about community service. I mean, they set up a lot of clinics all over, you know, clinic kesihatan all over. And that's where one should be getting in there and getting out to reach to the community itself, you know, and I think that's the most important thing. And that's what the World Federation is also emphasizing very much in terms of it.
When we come back, we'll find out how Malaysia got involved in the World Federation of Occupational Therapists. We will continue this discussion up next. If you have a question on occupational therapy, text 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. We're discussing occupational therapy, something we all don't usually talk about. We always talk about physiotherapy and all of that. And as I said earlier, when you talk about occupational therapy in this country, your mind automatically goes to SOCSO, thinking that, you know, that's where you go to SOCSO first and then you look for an occupational therapist and you try and go back to work.
That's because it's work-related.
Always work. We always think it's work-related. Whoever, it doesn't come to mind that children can actually seek the help of an occupational therapist, right up to someone who's a geriatric to seek help, isn't it? And when did Malaysia become a part of the World Federation of Occupational Therapists?
1992. Mm-hmm. 1990, we were an associate mm-hmm. member. In 1992, we became a full member.
Has it made a difference?
It is, yes. Because, you know, you're looking at setting up standards. You follow the standards of the World Federation. When you're setting up a program, you look at the standards. If you want to, the college or the university that's setting up the program need to set up the standards equivalent. If not, it's not recognized. And when it's not recognized, I mean, you will not be able to get any form of post-grad training or employment in any other countries.
Okay.
So they look at that, you know, and that sort of thing. So we've been very actively involved with the World Federation itself, and we actually contribute quite a bit in terms of looking at the standard point of view, and also it's a lot of interaction between the regionally. You know, for instance, last year, beginning of this year in Perdana University, we had a program together with the Philippines Occupational Therapist Association, disaster management, because they're fantastic. Those guys, because of the disasters that take place, they've been doing a fantastic job. And they came over and did some training program for the occupational therapists in this country because, Mira, I'm sure you remember last year, after the floods in the East Coast. And we felt there was a need for the local therapists to be trained. And so that's how. In Thailand, a good colleague of mine, Suchada, she does a lot of work in disaster management and mental health. Mental health is one area that's completely neglected. You know, people always look at therapy as a physical point of view.
Yes.
So the mental health aspect is such an important area. And as I said, historically, you know, OT started off in Malaysia, started off in the leprosy center, the first place. Leprosy center was the first place to have the first occupational therapist in 1958, 59. Barbara Titsley, the late Barbara Titsley, she was there and she set up the thing. And then the first Malaysian OT came in 1961. So leprosy center is where it started, which is very odd because very often it's a look at the mental health institution. Mm-hmm. Then it moves to orthopedics, then it looks at pediatrics and that sort of area. So that's all. So we have moved quite a bit in the World Federation.
Okay. And do you think, in terms of Malaysia, have we come a long way as far as occupational therapy? Do we have enough occupational therapists?
Certainly not.
You have currently 800 members.
We have 800 registered numbers as a Malaysian Occupational Therapy Association members, but actually we have total workforce is about 1,800 to 2,000. We actually yet to get an exact figure from our country because some of them graduate from overseas and never register, and we never have any information about them. But from the 1,800, and then more or less, we can calculate that we actually, that with our 33 million populations, the ratio of one OT is about to 18,000 populations. 18,000. So, but in Australia, for instance, that in 2012, the ratio of one OT is about to 1,600. Even in Hong Kong, there's about one OT to 4,600. So in that way that we actually need more. So we just take the benchmark that is saying that's about 5,000 populations to one OT to 5,000 population. Basically, we need about 6,600 OT in our country. Mm-hmm. But currently, we are having about 1,800 to 2,000 the most. So we are just about less than one third of the total required number.
We are trying to be a developed nation in 5 years' time.
Yes, that's
do you
right.
think, and we will definitely need more of these occupational therapists? I mean, have we prioritized this area?
I mean, obviously, the priority has always been in if you look at any developing countries, the priority is always in public health first, and then gradually it moves. And now, obviously, we are moving to an aging nation. And we're going to be caught with our pants down if we do not have enough therapists in the country.
It's got 2035,
yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I think the awareness has become now. I mean, I was in Union Street Hospital this morning. In 1977, there were only 4 occupational therapists. And today, how many are there?
We're having 97.
Which is a good thing?
Yes, yeah. We are actually having the biggest numbers and the biggest scope of service in our country.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, they have spread to service all the departments, you know. In GHKL in 1981, I still remember when I opened up the Department of the Physical Rehab, you know, for the OT, occupational therapy area, there were 2 of us. And today there are nearly 75 or 80 of them there serving the whole hospital. So I think it takes time, and it's great. The awareness has come, and if you look back at historically, this is exactly what happened in most of the other countries as well.
So we're getting there.
We are getting
slowly.
There. Getting there.
But are people interested in occupational therapy?
Oh, for sure.
Really?
So. For
it
sure
doesn't sound as sexy as it should. How do we, you know?
Because we can base
everybody wants
on the,
to be a doctor.
We just basically refer to the numbers of intake and the numbers of applicants to the local university and colleges. For instance, that UKM only produce about 30 or 40 OD a year, but the applications is very, very, the numbers of applicants is very high. Even they need to, the CGPA up to 3.7 or 3.8 only they manage to get into OT school. So, and UITM, you can always say that there are many of them try to go for diploma after their Form 5. So there's always the demands or the applications more than the seat that or the numbers of place that can offer to the fresh from 5 students. Mm-hmm. So that's why that we can see that demand is definitely is there. And another most important thing that I can say that almost 100% of the graduate from OT that is employed. So nobody is jobless.
Okay. But do these people have passion? That's the other thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's a big question.
I think the passion is something that I think not everybody can be an occupational therapist. Let's get that straight, because I mean, looking back, I know when I did my training, there were 98 of us. And by the time we graduated in London, there were only 40-something of us. Many of them dropped halfway. They said, hey, this is not my job to work with people with disability for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. It's going to affect. So I think but you acquire it, and I think you learn to have patience as it goes along, because you need a lot of patience and tolerance in this sort of thing.
And you need to like to work with human.
Of course.
It's a human.
It's like nurses and,
yes.
you know.
It's a human touch.
Yeah.
Medical
human
staff.
It's quite different from a doctor, because here, you, as I said, you may be seeing someone with illness process literally every day. Unlike a doctor, he sees it and, you know, and then comes back and sees them in a 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time. Here, you've been seeing someone daily. That's why I said, you know, they're no more a patient to you sometimes. They're just like a friend or a client.
Mm-hmm. Hence, you call them clients.
Yes.
You say that occupational therapy will soon be a licensed profession in Malaysia. So at the moment, it isn't?
Yes.
Yep. It's not licensed at all.
What does that mean?
That means you will have. That means all therapists will have, just like doctors and lawyers and everything, will have to register to practice. So you have to have a yearly practicing certificate. So it's interesting enough. It has just gone through the first reading, second, third reading.
Third reading.
We have already finished the third reading.
20th of October. So it did pass through the third reading.
So now it's going to the Devanagara.
Devanagara.
Okay.
With the next one. So I think by end of the year, it will be passed. And then, which is a good sign. That means you will not get hopeless pokers.
Yep.
And you'll also realize, the therapist will have to realize, they have to have certain standards, or they can be struck off from practice. And litigation will be also be there for some of these people, that sort of thing. So I think we are one, started this youngs, in the sense of, I remember in the 1979-80, we started talking about it, and finally we've reached there, you know. Singapore has got the license, you know, it's already passed.
And
they were ahead of us. And that's something that the World Federation has been
pushing for
all the countries.
So it'll get tighter, I suppose,
yes.
When the licenses are issued.
Yeah.
And weed out, I suppose, those who are, as you said, not the qualified people.
Yeah.
How different then, you know, you have the chiropractor who's not really licensed. I mean, regulations is very loose when it comes to a lot of other little pockets of therapists.
I think the allied health profession, the Ministry of Health is looking at about 23 different professions to be licensed as well. Chiropractors are not in that list at the moment in time, but I hope in the future. It's just, so I think it's a good thing that's happening. I mean, if you at one end you're looking at a developed nation, I think it's high time they move towards this sort of thing. So there's some check and balance on control.
World Occupational Therapy Day just passed, 27th of
yes.
October. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Actually, Occupational Therapy Day, World Occupational Therapy first launched on 27 October 2010. That's been down the line, including this year, it's about 5 years. Okay, since then, it's what's become an important date in the Occupational Therapy's calendar to promote and celebrate the profession internationally. So, as part of the World Federation's OT, I mean, we also try to celebrate in our country. Let's say that tomorrow, actually, that Perak OT is conducting the OT Opens Day in Taiping Mall, whereby we encourage the OTs and the public to join. This is hope to create more awareness to our publics about the rules of occupational therapies. And subsequently, that on the 22nd of November 2015, we as associations also, we are organizing an OT run for the occupational therapies and for publics. So from there, we hope that we can create more awareness about where we started and where we established from Sungai Buloh Hospital. So the run is going to be in Sungai Buloh Hospital.
Because of the leprosy centre, that's where
yes,
it started.
Yes, historically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that we hope that this will create better impact and also better awareness to the public about the rules of occupational therapies.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just very curious. So as an occupational therapist, what do you learn in school? If it covers such a wide range right. of the population, you can't be learning everything, anything and everything.
It's interesting because this morning one of the doctors was asking me, and he was so surprised at the amount of subjects that we learn academically. I mean, obviously, we learn anatomy, physiology, psychology in the first year, and you know, biomechanics, pathology and everything, and then the second year we move into medicine, surgery, psychiatry, and orthopedics, understand the medical condition. Then only you start learning the applications of various illness process and discipline comes into being. And then you also have areas of specialties now that have been encouraged a lot of therapists to specialize in. I mean, obviously one is community development, you know, CBR, community-based rehab, sexuality and disability, OT for the elderly. So there's a number of courses and things. I think one of the things that's very well established, I'm sure Mr. Sol agree with me, one of the things that's very well established is hand rehabilitation. And, you know, when you talk about hands, it's very often function. And so it's always end up going to an occupational therapist.
So how different is an occupational therapist? Okay, let's give you an example. I have a disability with my hand because of an accident. I go into an orthopedic surgeon. He helps me fix it. He helps me work with a physiotherapist. And then where do you come in?
Okay, physiotherapy is very much for gross movements, yep. looking at muscle testing and all the sort of range of movements. As I mentioned earlier, we are looking at end of the day is function, whether you're able to.
So after physiotherapy, you come in?
Sometimes it's complementary.
Complementary, and then we can treat the patient concurrently, mm-hmm. whereby that physio might look into the physical mobility, okay. and then also they talk about the motions, and then we'll look into the function, we're looking into the power, we're looking about the coordinations, about we talk about the threshold, and then the manipulation skill. So from that only we can assess how well the patient function is supposed to be, and then from there whether the patient is able to return to the normal job and also return back to the family.
Gentlemen, I'll be very honest, this sounds very costly. How are you going to get these occupational therapists into the picture as part of a multidisciplinary team? And this exists very much in the private sector now. I know it costs a lot because on top of, as I said, the orthopedic surgeon, the occupational yeah. therapist, now you have the physiotherapist. It may even extend, you know, to more areas that needs one person needs the help of so many experts. And, you know, where do we draw the line in terms of cost?
See, I think no one solo person is expert in everything, and you need the whole team effort to get that person back onto feet and able to carry on function. I think you're right. The cost factor of looking at after one person is. But end of the day is results. And, you know, if you want, it's no use of the surgeon. I mean, I've worked with surgeons who said, look, I only cut. Can you please take it over and yes. handle it? And the outcome is function. It's full stop. It's a waste of time getting a surgeon doing a hand case when the patient's not going to come for a rehab.
Do you think government will be able to afford this?
I mean, they're already in government hospitals, a lot of therapists working, and I think they cover different aspects of the thing. So it's a cost benefit to you if you have a person without a disability.
That's if you have the means to actually seek the help.
Yeah.
If you don't, then what happens?
But if you look at it in terms of economic of scale, someone with a disability is going to be a burden to society, and because of being a burden, it's going to be passed down to, you know, the government sector itself having to look after this person.
So should we all be paying more SOCSO to help in instances like this?
Actually, it's not necessary. At the time being that what we can see that, for example, we look into long-term benefit. Let's say for short-term benefit, maybe it's that patient need to come and see us as three times a week or twice a week, or even some of the patient need to come daily. But those are acute injury patients that whereby quite a number of them are covered under SOCSO and nowadays also under insurance scheme. Mm-hmm. So those patients actually have not much problem about payment aspect. But on the other category of patient that whereby that the disability is permanent, for example, like I mentioned, stroke patient and traumatic brain injury patients and also amputated patients. What happened that this group of patients, they actually cover under the social welfare scale that they register as a disabled population, whereby that they're entitled OKU card. So from the OKU itself, they entitled free treatment in government hospital. So they don't even need to pay a single cent. Mm-hmm. But those are employed workers, they are covered under SOCSO. So actually, there is not a big problem of the payment unless that patient's going to seek for treatment from the private center. So for private, maybe that they're going to cost them a bomb, that let's say that patient to come and see the therapist daily. And then for next 1 month or 2 months, so for government setting, that's not a big problem. Mm-hmm. For private, that's why that sometimes that the patients go for one or twice and then patients defaulted themselves, and then this is going to be a problem.
The reason I ask is because I have the bottom 40% of the population in mind.
Yeah.
The bottom 40% of the population that cannot afford to pay for a lot of this. SOCSO yes. may not even be enough. Yeah. Some of them are the sole breadwinner in these families.
And SOCSO is only if you are a contributor to SOCSO.
Correct.
You know, the other. But you see, if you take a person, very often they don't need to sometimes come to a hospital. I always keep saying we very often what we do is the initial acute phase, we start off the rehab program for them, the therapy program, and we teach them to carry it out at home. So sometimes in a lot of the therapy could be done on your own, again depend on whether the person is determined to carry on the therapy at home. Because I always say, in therapy, you're coming to a hospital, the most is 1 hour you're going to spend, but you've got 23 hours in a day. And you need to spend some time, more than that, 1 hour, in order to achieve that particular goal or thing. Classical is you take a stroke patient. Studies have shown you're looking at least you need, in terms of therapy, as long as about 6 months after a stroke.
Even sometimes longer.
Or longer, 6 to 8. After this maintenance therapy, you don't need to come to a hospital for maintenance or therapy. So very often we teach them, you go up and then you come back, and then the second stage and third stage. And very often we teach the carer.
But sometimes we need to incorporate home exercise program or home, rehabilitation program, whereby that the carer can guide them. And meanwhile, that they come back to us is mainly for us to review the progress and try to modify the program if there is a positive change or even the negative change. So that's why that patients, family members and caregiver need to work as a team beside the medical team. For example, the physicians, the physiotherapists, and the speech therapists. And we try to work together. We took to look into the holistic aspect of the patients. So from there, everybody play their role. And then as we expect that the patient will get the best result out of it. So in terms of long-term benefits, that if the patients that manage to return to work after undergo the full rehabilitation program for the period of 6 months or 9 months, so we can see that economical, actually, they are good for the family.
Mm. Actually, they've done, studies in Canada, research, finding the value of occupational therapy in terms of reducing the costs in hospitals. If you are able to treat the person well, carrying out programs, sending the person back home, how it has helped them economically.
Yeah, Professor Nathan, I'm always very concerned how we implement programs in the country.
I fully agree with you.
Canada is in a different league altogether.
Yeah, but we need to learn from some of these countries. I fully agree with you, because it is not just getting a person coming to the hospital, doing some therapy and going back. It's not going to help unless... what's the next stage of the process? I think that's the most important thing.
I think Mira, for sure, Mira aware about Lely Hospital. Set out their own rehabilitation hospital in Ayakuru, Melaka. Mm-hmm. So they actually go all out to promote this return to work program. So they have their own hospital. They have the whole rehab team is there. So they tend to make sure that those what we call young worker that injured and unable to return to work, they try to plan out the full rehabilitation program for them and slowly try to put them back to workplace, and whether it's a modified works or the new employment or return to the same employment. And then this try to reduce the compensations or the insurance claim from SOCSO.
Okay. The floods with the monsoon season is going to come up soon. We are not sure. I mean, fingers crossed. Hopefully, the floods will not be as extensive as it was last year. You did mention how some occupational therapists were involved in the floods last year. I mean, will they be mobilized for to be on standby for the floods this year as well?
I'm not sure how the ministry is going to organize this, but obviously some of the therapists now are more aware, more trained, because actually we did workshops with them, so they're more aware on previously, nobody was aware how to handle the situation. I mean, to be fair, Mira, just after the tsunami, I went with Mercy Militia for 14 days to Sri Lanka, and it opened my eyes. And I just realized that some of the things, you have to switch roles to work there. You're no more a therapist. You're no more a doctor. You're no more a nurse. You just have to switch roles and do everything different. And then it opens your eyes. And I think that is what... it's the most important thing for people to understand, to understand the mankind, what they need, what the human beings need at the time of a disaster, and accept. And I think it's not very much of to understand the psychological impact of this. That's where the most important thing.
Your message this World Occupational Therapy Day?
My message would be to serve the community. I mean, you don't need to be an occupational therapist to serve the community, and I think everybody should contribute something or other to serve people and mankind, and it gives you a good feeling in your heart.
Mm-hmm. Mr. So?
I actually feel that my message is to make sure that we try to look into the positive aspect of the patients, how well that we can help them and how well we can put them back to society and to the family, and meanwhile, they try to make them as a productive populations.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. That was Mr. So Se Beng, President of the Malaysian Occupational Therapy Association, and Professor Nathan Vaitalingam, immediate past president of the Asia-Pacific Occupational Therapy Regional Group, this World Occupational Therapy Day on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.